They made certain guarantees at that time, and then in 1896, under British influence, the Federated Malay States was formed, taking four of the most powerful states. This was supposed to give the natives an opportunity under this federation to build towards a larger federated state with true home rule. Actually, it turned out to be anything but that. The British more and more cut the power of the natives, although they did agree that not only would they hold the land inviolate, but they would develop the country, they would build railroads, and they kept their promises. They built over 1,000 miles of railroad. They built good roads. They developed tin. They developed rubber. And this all looked fine. But in order to do this, they brought in large numbers of Chinese, southern Chinese, to work in these industries. And they brought in a large number of Tamils from South India also to work. Because the Malay is a gentleman, he doesn't like to work for himself, and he won't be a coolie for anybody. The result was that he didn't develop. The British brought in these workers to develop the tin mines and the railroads and the like. And the Chinese came, and they thrived. They made money. They took advantage of the opportunities for education for their children. And this aggressive, hard-working group became a very substantial part of the population. And they increased in such numbers that they formed just about half the population of the Malay Peninsula at the present time. And the Tamils also did pretty well. And they stayed, a great many of them, but they only make up about 14% of the population. Well, as the Chinese got more and more powerful, the question came about what would happen here. And so there was an attempt to decentralize on the part of the British. This alarmed the Chinese. They were afraid that they would be turned back to the native sovereigns, and that that meant that they would be cut in many of their opportunities. And here we begin to see the growth of nationalism. The first time I was in the Malay States, I think it was fair to say that the Chinese in that region were individual Chinamen. They were there because they wanted to make money. They came down to get money and to go home and have plenty of money, but if they succeeded so well, a large part of them stayed. But I don't think that they thought of themselves particularly as Chinese. Nationalism was not very strong. By the time that the Japs began their pressure on China, the Chinese in this region here began to feel that they were Chinese. They formed societies. They sent large sums of money to fight the Japs. And the nationalistic spirit was very strong. Then during the war, the Chinese came in here in very... the Chinese were armed. They formed guerrilla bands, and there is no doubt that at this time, large numbers of communists, honest-to-goodness communists, did come into this territory, and that they're there at the present time. And that they have very definitely taken a part in the troubles which exist there at the present time. But now comes the trouble. The British, in trying to do something about this, you see, there was no Malay citizenship. Again, the Malay had his allegiance to his village or to his native state, but not to Great Britain. The only real union they had was in Mohammedanism. Some of them aided the Japanese, but for the most part, we find the situation of the Chinese aiding or becoming guerrillas. The tremendous loss of face which Britain suffered with the loss of Singapore was a tremendous blow to the white man and the rule of the white man in this region. The British are attempting at the present time to set up a new type of rule whereby Singapore will remain British, but that the rest of the territory will be formed into a Malayan union in which all people who have lived 10 years, become members of this union. And again, that sounds pretty good, or any person born here becomes a citizen. But it breaks every pledge that the British have given to the native sovereigns. The British are giving away something they don't own. They haven't any right to. The land belongs to the native states here. And to say that anyone who has been here for 10 years or born in this region becomes a citizen in a state which they have no right to hold is again breaking every possible pledge. It'll take a Solomon to settle this situation here. If they attempt to turn the land back to the native sovereigns and to dispossess the Chinese who make up half the population are very certainly going to revolt, and that the and they may do it anyway. Referring now for just a moment, and I must stop, to the Philippines, I think you all know that we had made tremendous headway in this part of the world. We had done a great deal for education. We had done a great deal for the betterment of the country. We had opened roads. We had built the people up towards self-government to a point where I think that very possibly, very probably, they could have succeeded had not this war come on. But the war did come. As you know, the Filipinos threw their lot with us, and as a result, they suffered more probably than any other people in this part of the world. And then in our attempts to get the Japs out, in our saving them, we went further with the destruction. There has been, in this time of very great hardship for the people, there has not been, on the part of the government, the same attempt to hold down expenses or to cut down the display of the ruling group. Not only that, there's been bad handling of the relief funds, which we have been sending in, and a scandal which is published daily in the Manila papers, but of which we hear almost nothing here. The failure of the government to meet the issues has given another very bad situation. For instance, there has been, even from Spanish days, a bad agrarian problem in the provinces here of central Luzon, where you have absentee landlordism, or the so-called building up of the cacique, the large landholder, and the people very close to peonage. It's something which we aided, which we attempted to do away with and had done a good deal, but we hadn't solved the problem. Then comes on the war, the destruction, these people being armed, and they demanded certain relief, which they didn't get. Probably up as late as 2 years ago, it might have been possible, had a stronger government or had a strong government come in, to have made the necessary reforms. But as always happens, the communists move in where there's trouble. And today they have stirred up such a mess that it's going to be extremely difficult for us for the Philippine government to settle the so-called Huk trouble. The United States has in the Philippines a very great deal of goodwill. It has another nation, which as a nation is not communistic. There's no doubt that the communists are stirring up trouble, but it is not communistic. But the United States must insist, as if we are to continue our help toward the Philippines, we must insist on very real reforms. And one of them must be the handling of this agrarian problem. One of the most hopeful things that I have learned recently is the refusal of the United States government to send, they've sent over a commission, which was, the Filipinos wished to be a mixed commission, which would take care of the handling of the funds which the United States would send in. The United States has refused that, and it will be a straight United States commission that will handle the handling out of these funds. It looks as though we are tightening up, and that we have here perhaps some reason for hope of better conditions. Well, I think perhaps I have said enough to make it clear that the rule of the white man in this part of the world is today pretty weak. I think you can make it a little bit stronger and say that as a ruler, the white man in this part of the world is through. We may be able, and I hope we will be able, to find a new way of living and working with these people. But it has to be a new way. The nationalistic spirit is so strong, the people, the whole Orient is seething with revolt. And they have not forgotten the days of exploitation. And I think that there is no hope of establishing for any length of time the old colonial system. We might be able to put the Dutch back in the Indies by force, temporarily, although I even doubt that. It might be possible to maintain the French here for a time longer, but not for very long. I think it's pretty clear that the United States has reached a point where we must have some very grave decisions. If we appear as backers of the old regime, of the old colonial systems, then we set ourselves against what the natives think of as progress and of nationalism. On the other hand, we can't abandon these lands to the incursions of the communists. We can't allow the communists to take over French Indochina unless we want to give up Siam and put pressure on these regions to the south. About the only solution I can see to all of this is in something like the United Nations, in which these governments, which we have spoken of, Indonesia, the Philippines, Siam, and India, Burma, in which they will be very definitely apart, in which they will have their say. The white man is not going to set up a regime of the United Nations that's going to tell the people in this part of the world what to do and get away with it very long. But if we can work with and by these people, getting them to help, the amount of goodwill which America has in the Philippines, the amount of goodwill which the United Nations and the particularly of America has down here in the Dutch Indies, I think, and in Siam, I believe we have a nucleus here which may make it possible, not for the United States, not for the Dutch, not for the white man to go back here as a ruler, but for us to work out a new scheme of mutual respect whereby it will be possible to live and work with these people.